Welcome to the podcast, everyone. We are excited to be speaking with Michelle Ray, an award-winning international leadership keynote speaker, entrepreneur, author, and educator who advocates the importance of developing outstanding future-ready leaders, change agents, and engaged teams. She's the founder of Lead Yourself First Enterprises and has worked with renowned corporations, all levels of government, and numerous business associations as a respected expert and thought leader. She's the author of Lead Yourself First, Indispensable Lessons in Business and in Life. Her new leadership book, Helping Leaders Navigate the Future World of Work, is due for release in the fall of 2021.
Today we speak with Michelle about how she got into the business, what makes people good leaders, and what she's seeing across corporate Canada. We hope you enjoy the conversation as much as we did. Michelle, it's an honor to have you on the podcast today. How are you?
I'm very well, Marcel. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Michelle, I'd like to get straight into it and understand a little bit more about how you got into the profession that you're in today.
Well, it's quite a journey, and it began in Australia. I was working for a nonprofit organization and just had the most wonderful CEO. Also around that time, I had actually returned from Canada, where I'd had a one-year working holiday that I never got out of my system. So it was always in the back of my mind to come back. So even though I had this wonderful opportunity working for this incredible CEO, I wrote to the same organization internationally, wrote to them in Canada and said, I want to be, you know, emigrating to Canada and I'd like to work for your organization there, and told them about my experience. So fast forward about 15 months later, cutting out some of the detail, I moved to Canada. The job was basically waiting for me, but it was night and day. The fundamental difference between the two experiences was the leadership. So that left me fascinated, perhaps not initially fascinated just by the difference between the leaders, but I know that it made me really think about what it means to be a great leader, as I experienced two vastly different individuals working for the same organization. And I didn't stay in the job because I just really found that it became untenable, very toxic. And I believed in myself enough to take the plunge, knew that some of the aspects of the job that I was doing I really enjoyed, despite the negative leadership experience. And one of the things that I really enjoyed was being in front of people, which was a requirement of my job to do presenting and talk about the programs that our organization offered to business people. So that's really what got me started. And I took a real risk, left that job with no safety net, and began speaking for a public seminar company that were looking for presenters. And that opportunity took me all over the world, began in Canada, but ultimately took me all over the world, gave me the chance to start my business doing speaking, consulting, training, keynoting. And here I am 25 years later, not working as a contractor anymore, but with my own business.
That's fascinating, and I have had the good fortune of hearing you speak at a virtual conference earlier this year, and I was curious to know a little bit more when you said you were hired as a professional speaker and you had speaking engagements around the world. I presume you were not born with the ability to speak so naturally and effectively in public as you do today, in addition to your leadership acumen. I was interested to learn a little bit more about moments in your life that you consider pivotal in terms of developing the skill set that you have. And I was also wondering who some of your personal and professional mentors are and why.
Oh, well, it's quite a story. And thank you for the compliment about my ability to speak. My parents, who are no longer with us, my mother would probably say that I never knew when, you know, I talk too much. I just know that when I'm in front of an audience, it doesn't feel, I can't say it doesn't feel effortless. It just feels like I'm in it's my passion. There are certainly times when depending on where I am and what I'm doing, where I feel the stakes are really, really high. You know, I never take what I do lightly. I'm aware that there's a responsibility to deliver for my clients and my audiences. Never, ever do I take that for granted. But you've got to start somewhere, right? So, you know, when you just plunge knee deep into doing public speaking for a company that at that time was expanding its roots all over the world and, you know, giving me the opportunity to speak a lot, I think that's what really helped me. So I was delivering these business seminars in various cities, you know, going from one to the other, sometimes five in a row, going through multiple time changes, going through every sort of issue that you could have happen at an event venue under the sun and still having to stay calm and cool and deliver. I mean, that when I look back on that, sometimes I don't know how I managed to do that. But it definitely makes you a road warrior, as in W-A-R-R-I-O-R. And I think that that's what, you know, contributed to the success that I've continued to have.
Michelle, I had a couple of things kind of jump in my head when you were speaking there. But one of them in particular, so on your website, it says, Michelle is one of the less than 700 people worldwide to have earned the Certified Speaking Professional designation. Now, if you knew the amount of edits I have to do for my speaking points on this podcast, you would think that perhaps I was not predisposed to ending up with that, you know, one of those 700 people. But I am curious, you know, public speaking seems like such a great, you know, valuable skill. But for some reason, people are generally terrified of public speaking. Do you remember struggling at first, or was this kind of always fairly natural for you?
Yeah, I think it was fairly natural. I was showing you earlier the size of my manuscript for my next book. But I used to come on stage sometimes and I would have like this pile of notes and it was always my safety net, but I never looked at them. or I very rarely would look at them. But I would just feel more comfortable doing that. But it you know, it's just an evolution. And I think that the more that you speak, the more you speak. So the more opportunities that I was given, I think it helped me to hone my craft because I was put in such challenging situations many, many times because there was always the, you know, the element of the unknown that would happen, or there would be a heckler in the audience, or I would get to my next destination and I could just give you a list of things that would happen. But, you know, I just think there's something about, you know, when I'm, you know, with an audience, and I just think it's so important to just be yourself, easier said than done. But I just, you know, had many, many mentors. You asked me about mentors earlier, and I would study them and I would look at how they connected with an audience. I would seek them out. I would have conversations with them. You know, this was all before the internet too in the beginning, 1995. I would get on calls with people and I would travel to watch them work, you know, some of the peers that were doing what I was doing. And I think that really made the world of difference. And then I was able to start developing my own style and carving out my own message.
Yeah, I guess it's the old, you know, practice makes perfect there, perhaps. But the other thing that really jumped out at me, because you said something that I've always been really fascinated with as well. You said you were fascinated with the difference between leaders. So
yes,
there was a good leader and there was a bad leader. And I've always been really interested in this, too, as someone who has had, you know, great managers and bad managers through the years. So for me, it seems like a lot of it comes back to authenticity, and authenticity seems to be the trait that I don't know for sure if it's most often lacking in leadership, but it seems to me that it's the one that's most obvious when it is missing or when it is lacking in a leader. It seems very obvious to me when a manager is telling me something that they don't either, you know, either don't fully believe or don't fully understand. And my reaction is just to, you know, not pay attention to this manager, to be honest. Another example would be someone, a manager who has some kind of ethical blindfold on when making decisions. That's always bugged me a lot. And it seems, you know, the credibility just goes away for me. And of course, all of us
through the years, at some point, I assume, have had, you know, some kind of a micromanager, and we all know how demotivating that can be. So it seems like I've got a good understanding intuitively, mm-hmm. perhaps, what makes someone a bad manager, because I've experienced it. I'm not sure if I know what makes someone a good manager. So what makes people good leaders?
Oh, my gosh. And we, you know, we could talk about this for the rest of the day, guys. but, you know, this, what makes somebody a good leader, I really think it's about understanding that you're there for other people. You are there really to serve them, and that it's not about you. You know, it's, people will gravitate to an individual who recognizes that character counts, and character counts above all else. You know that my philosophy is that leadership is about character, and it's about mindset, and it's not about a title. So a great leader is someone who can just totally remove their ego and is very relatable and is able to draw people in because they don't put themselves on a pedestal. You know, that the moment you encounter that person, you feel their warmth, you feel that they're genuine, you feel that they're interested in you, that they're able to shut off all the pressures that they might be under and make you feel like you're the most important thing going on in their world in that moment. And I, you know, some people, I don't know why they don't necessarily just grasp that. It is, you know, it is an age that we're in today where leadership is very complicated, very complex. You know, we've used the word disruption ad nauseum. We're experiencing, you know, being in the middle of a pandemic. So there's so much coming at a leader today that challenges them to be that best self that they can be. But I also think it's a great opportunity because if you can really show people that you care, if you can really be there to welcome them when they come back to work, to be the role model, you know, with the hand sanitizer and the face mask or whatever it's going to take, that they really can see that you care about their well-being, it doesn't have to take much. But I think leaders also make it very complicated in their approach.
Michelle, you and I first met at the at a leadership virtual conference earlier in the year, and your presentation really impacted me greatly, I must say, so much so, and I'm so thrilled that you're here talking to us today, because I think your message is very important to business leaders around Canada and around the world for that matter. But what resonated the most with me was your discussion about the importance of leaders focusing on a response rather than a reaction.
Exactly.
The notion that a reaction is emotional relative to a response, which is more about values. Can you elaborate a little bit more about this important point, just for the benefit of the people listening to this podcast right now?
Absolutely. So, you know, we have an opportunity when we're faced with any kind of challenge, you know, really the choices are to respond or react. Now, the first thing that happens before we actually take any action is that we're gathering our perceptions of a situation, and it's happening at an unconscious level. So we have all of these preconceived ideas, filters, past experiences that are, you know, that we're are getting activated or getting triggered whenever we're in a challenging situation. It brings a lot of things, you know, brings up a lot of memories, etc. So in that moment, we need to decide, are we going to sink or swim? So we have a chance to reframe how we're perceiving a particular situation. Is it an opportunity or is it a challenge, even during the current times that we're experiencing? So when we are really in tune with ourselves and we have a high level of self-awareness, then we are able to discern and separate ourselves from what's actually happening. I know it sounds in some ways very simple, but you know, we're not causing what's happening. So can we take a step back from it and then decide which road we're going to take? So, you know, it's a natural tendency. It's It's part of our DNA to kick into what we all know as the fight or flight response. And that is intuition, or it's very intuitive because we all have it within us. That's something that every human being is either going to want to fight or flee when something is challenging our safety, right? So I think all of that is very normal. But what we don't always realize is that we have the ability, and it takes a little bit of, to follow this and to understand it, but it's the ability to be counterintuitive, which literally means going against the grain, going against that natural tendency to react. And by that I mean to be able to take a step back, to literally catch yourself prior to reacting, to be able to say to yourself, wait a minute, maybe there's another way. And by that I mean being counterintuitive, that we can choose to rise above and be the objective observer of what's happening around us rather than thinking it's happening to us. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And I guess just hearing you so articulately answer that question, the immediate thought that came to my mind is when you're consulting, when you have worked with some of the most admired companies in the world, I mean, the McDonald's, Dell Computers, Procter & Gamble, PayPal, the FBI, which is pretty cool. I mean, you have an impressive list of clients, and all this information is obviously very public. But when you're speaking with an executive vice president or at that senior leadership level, recognizing that they can't control every little aspect of the teams that they lead, what is when you go into these conversations, and I know you're well researched prior to these engagements, but where do you start, and how do you know that your involvement is making some meaningful change in a company's culture?
Oh, well, I think first of all, it's the same message that I try to practice myself that I pass on to leaders. And I just try to bring it down to the simplest concepts. And the one that seems to resonate the most is, and you just said it, everything, so much is outside of our control. So the solution is to focus on what's within your control. And what is within your control is to create the best organization that you can, to create the best culture that you can, and to create the best leaders that you can and the best teams that you can. So it starts with you. It starts with the choices that you make. And, you know, having that capacity to be really honest with yourself and, you know, sometimes you have to make some very difficult decisions, but that is within your control. You know, so if you let problems fester, or you know that you might have someone that isn't the right fit, and what would be the consequences of keeping that person for the rest of the organization, you have to make some tough decisions sometimes. And then also when it comes to holding up the mirror and looking at yourself as a leader, you know, what is within your control? What are some of the things that you can work on to do differently? What are some of the things that you already know that are traits that you can build on? I think that if we start from that vantage point, it makes it a lot easier. Okay, let me give you one example. So one of the things that I'm going to be covering in my next book when it gets released, it's all about the future of leadership and having leaders understand, you know, what it's going to take to really connect with their next, with the future of work, meaning their workforce that is now coming into the workforce, and the, of course, the generations that are going to continue to come in and continue to evolve. So if we are having difficulty understanding other people's values and why they think the way that they do, if we have enough self-awareness, we can start to educate ourselves about what matters to them. We might not necessarily agree with what their values are, but if we can acknowledge them, that they may be different to ours, how can we try to find that common ground? How can we try to find ways to relate to them? Well, I think one of the best ways to, you know, crack the code is to say, you know, I'm not sure I understand all of your philosophies, and I don't know if I even agree with them all, but I just want you to know that I'm open to it and I'm doing my best. And taking that responsibility and accountability first creates the conditions to start improving and making deeper connections with people. So I think owning your own lens first is what a lot of leaders may be struggling with. That's just been my experience.
Michelle, it seems to me, at least my experience has been, that senior leaders are usually very competent and also very confident people.
Yes.
Are they reluctant to take your advice? Like, what are some of the main hurdles you face when you're trying to assist?
Well, I think a lot of the time, and you know, again, it seems to come with the territory, is, you know, just letting go of the position versus the person. You know, and when you strip it all away, there's an individual there who has some vulnerabilities and has some of their own struggles that they need to come to terms with to understand what it means to be real. But, you know, there are quite a number of them that are obviously successful because they are open, they are transparent, and they really get it. They really get that that's what it takes to find ways to build the relationships with people. So I'm not sure if I entirely answered that question, but if the one thing that's holding them back is just being wrapped up in their own position.
Yeah, well, it's just to kind of expand on that a little bit. I was saying to Marcel prior to the podcast that this is just, it's very anecdotal. So I spent several years as a commercial banker. And during that time, I noticed that there was a bit of a trend. And keep in mind, most of my clients had sales. Towards the end of my career, they had sales between 10 and 100 million. I'm not sure if we want to call that medium-sized businesses, but that's what I'll say for my purposes today. So anything larger than that or public entities, it's very rare I ran across them. And most of the time, it wasn't necessarily an owner-managed business, but that was certainly the owner was involved in the day-to-day decisions for the most part with the vast majority of my client base. Yeah. And what I noticed was that the more authoritative, in fact, the owner was, the more it really surprised me that the better the business tended to be run. And granted, I realize that I'm not sure how that works with the literature on all of this stuff, because it seems to be counterintuitive to me. And it seems to be counterintuitive to what we're seeing with these, you know, let's say the McDonald's and the PayPals and that have, you know, Marcel already alluded to. I'm just wondering, does an authoritative approach as a leader take you so far and allow you to succeed, for an example, until a business becomes to a certain level and size and scale? And after that, is it necessary to bring in a less authoritative and perhaps more transformational style leader?
Well, let me put it to you this way. The reason that individual was successful and was able to have all and help all of you succeed, there's a number one ingredient, and it's called trust. So trust is the greatest motivator. It's an intangible. So if a person has a prescriptive style of leadership, you know, which is perhaps akin to an authoritative style, it's okay if they have already demonstrated to you that they understand you and it's not all about them. You know, I mean, we can't necessarily just strip away who we are. If we are that type of person, like a get things done type of individual who calls the shots. But in order to make that work, people have to trust you. You have to build that trust quotient to be able to achieve the results that you did. And then I believe that that's why you were successful. So it's not necessarily that it's a bad thing, but it's about that individual's capacity to connect with others and inspire them because of the belief in them, that they're there for them, but they also have an agenda. They've got to get things done. So you've got to be able to do the two things simultaneously.
Michelle, I was fortunate to hear Barack Obama speak here in Halifax last year, and one of the things that stood out for me, I mean, the man is brilliant. I'm sure many would agree. Yes. And he was speaking about his time in office as the American president and challenging the status quo as it relates to politics, both domestically and internationally. And the notion of challenging others while also acknowledging one's own issues. And if you're open about that, it makes everything else easier in terms of diplomacy. So not that I want to have a political conversation with you, but the notion of challenging the status quo, but the importance of acknowledging one's own issues. What are some ways that you work with people to help them with that in the event that it does not come as naturally, presumably, as it does with you? Is that learned? Is that taught? Is it a combination of both? How do you achieve that?
Well, that's, you know, I think it really starts by really getting to know the client, understanding where they're coming from, asking lots of questions. You know, I'm a really big believer in doing a lot of asking and less talking, ironically enough, because the more you get to understand it, you know, an individual's perspective, I mean, if you understand where they're coming from, I think, you know, there's an adage, if we want other people to be interested in us, we first need to show interest in them. And I think that's a door opener. And once you've heard their perspectives, then I think, you know, or they might be fairly rigid, you know, then you're able to just keep posing those questions to be able to challenge those assumptions. And I really think that comes with that whole idea of, you know, the what if type of questions, or what would happen if we did it this way, and what would happen if we looked at it through this lens? What might that look like for you? You know, and then you'll uncover what the real challenge is, and it's generally wrapped up in fear and uncertainty. That when people are stuck or they don't want to move out of the status quo, you know, they're so entrenched in it because it's become a very comfortable place to be. So you kind of have to earn that permission to start introducing those ideas. And I think that it comes from really trying to understand where they're coming from and getting to know them as much as you possibly can and why, you know, they're going down, are wanting to stay where they are before you can expect them to start looking at alternatives.
So you had kind of touched on this in a few of your responses so far, Michelle. Obviously, we are, you know, having this conversation with you. We're in September 2020. We're in the midst of a global pandemic, and you know, this is affecting everybody in their own unique way. But you've probably, in your unique position, let's say, you've likely come across several conversations with senior leaders all across Canada. I'm very curious to, you know, what critical leadership skills you're helping people sharpen right now, and what are you seeing across corporate Canada, you know, given the situation we find ourselves in?
Well, it's not, thank you for that. And it's probably not going to come as a surprise. You know, people keep talking about this and it has, because it's still highly relevant. And I think the pandemic has made it even more relevant. What are the skills? Well, you know, Daniel Goleman's groundbreaking research around emotional intelligence and, you know, talking about a leader's emotional quotient, or what he called EQ, accounts for 67% of the abilities necessary for a superior leadership performance. And really, that has now become more apparent than ever. And as we've been talking about, It's something that great leaders are realizing, that if business is still all about people, and even more importantly, you know, if we're going to stay connected to people during difficult times, our survival depends on individuals. It depends on our workforce. Our business is going to survive because of the people that are making it happen. So, you know, it makes sense that the way that you are able to project your confidence and belief in other people is evidenced by your ability to bring people along for that ride. You know, you've You've got to demonstrate that capacity emotionally. We keep getting back to that, as opposed to just being very transactional in what you do.
Michelle, Jeff and I are both in the banking finance industry. And if you look at the stock market indices and what sectors are sort of outperforming others, the conversation often jumps to technology and how the innovation that's taking place in that industry right now is really coming to the fore. And you certainly see it in the financial results, but it's also changing the way we do business and the way we interact with each other, this podcast being a classic example. There's a lot of people out there who may feel, as a result of the pandemic, they may at some point face job insecurity because their skills may or may not become redundant. It's playing on the notion of reskilling people and what some of the critical skills would be in the future. What would you say to those people, or what skills, based on your experience and the world we find ourselves in now, do you think people should really focus on in order to continue to be successful?
Well, I think there's a lot of truth to that, the more that we can evolve with the technology and expose ourselves to opportunities to learn more. You know, we know now that reskilling has become a priority, and we know there's a lot of research out there about, we've been talking about the gig economy for years, but certainly in this time of economic uncertainty, many companies are examining their internal structures and their long established hiring practices. And, Gartner, for example, reports that 32% of companies are replacing full-time employees with contingent workers. And they're doing that as a cost-saving measure. And also, so many people are working remotely. Almost 50% of people are working that way since the pandemic began. But I think it's also a time where, as you just said, people are realizing that we need to advance quickly technologically, and everything has been accelerated through the pandemic. So whether we can reskill ourselves, if, for example, we might have been affected employment wise by the pandemic, to have the kinds of skills that organizations need that can help with the technology to operate remotely. And I think it's just brought everything to the forefront.
I'm kind of chuckling here. I wonder if I can bring you into something that's close to my heart. I hate internal meetings. I find them unnecessarily long, boring, and often have very little applicability to the things I'm most concerned with. I'm wondering what you think of meetings, and if you were speaking to the leaders out there, at least at a minimum to entertain me, how can a leader run an engaging and valuable meeting?
That's a big topic to cover. First of all, if you're doing it online, I mean, that has become, the norm for so many individuals. I think the same principles of a great meeting apply whether you're face-to-face or online, and you've got to be really well prepared. And I think that one of the best ways to create greater engagement is to give people different roles and responsibilities so they can, bring their expertise to the meeting, have fun with the way that you start them. I think all of those elements, so really being well prepared, assigning people specific roles, bringing in the fun factor will make the world of difference, breaks the tension and the monotony, and, making sure that you do what you're going to say during that meeting. In other words, sticking to your agenda, having an agenda, making sure you've covered your bases.
Michelle, you alluded to this earlier, but I want to bring us back to the fact that you, in your possession, have a manuscript of a book that you've just written. And I would love to know more about the book and what was the inspiration behind compelling you to write the book, and what readers can expect after having read it.
Oh, well, thank you so much. First of all, I think the reason that I was inspired to write this book is I think that if leaders are going to be successful in the future, they've got to find ways to stay relevant themselves. So whether you've been leading for like 10 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, because of the harsh reality that the workforce has changed and that, you know, what leaders are trying to do today, and it goes back to your earlier point about reskilling, is they've got to tackle the dual imperatives of digital transformation, because we are now in the digital economy, the age of technology, and we've also got to be able to manage keeping great people. We've got to be able to do the two things simultaneously. And at the same time, if we're going to do that, we have to be able to relate, which is what I was saying earlier, to the shifts that are happening in the way that the workforce thinks, what's important to them, understanding that we may not have them with us forever. How can we be that relevant leader that is able to, you know, rise to these new challenges and stay inspired ourselves? So there's two different areas that I cover in the book. One is about the evergreen leadership skills that I believe will always be in vogue. You know, the things that we can say are without doubt essential to being a great leader. Some of those things we talked about already, such as emotional intelligence, such as being authentic, being transparent, being there for other people. Those things are fundamental things that will probably never change, I would suggest. But there's also a tremendous amount that has changed. For example, you know, we have, and we've seen it accelerate through the pandemic, we have greater employee activism. I have covered in my book an area that I've called Voices Rising. You know, we know that because we're in the age of, digital transformation and social media, it's given employees a voice more so than at any other time. So everybody has a voice today, not only leaders, and our workforce isn't going to shy away from expressing that voice. We have, as I said earlier, a workforce with different values. We have 5 generations working together for the first time in history. How do we navigate all of that successfully? We have people rethinking the types of careers they want and, you know, wanting to be entrepreneurs while perhaps being with an organization or just going out on their own and being the entrepreneurs of the future. That's already happening on a massive scale. So, as I said, that's why the role of the leader has also changed and how we need to adapt to that. And I want to inspire leaders to apply practical solutions and ideas to be successful in the future of work.
I can't wait to read it.
That makes two of us. And Michelle, I'm realizing we're under a bit of a time constraint here, but the reality is that may have been a good spot for us to end this conversation as well let's say basic advice for leaders, if I could summarize it. You know, so you could put several of those points in a bullet point presentation for someone to begin, let's say, understanding what it takes to be a leader. So I just wanted to take the time to thank you for being on the podcast. There was a lot of great stuff in here, and I second Marcel's commentary with the reading your book.
Oh, it'll be an absolute pleasure to get both of you a copy, and I would be delighted to come back on the podcast anytime and expand on some of the other ideas that that I cover in the book as well.
We'll contact your agent, Michelle.
I'm waiting.
You're a gem. Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. Thank you both so very much for having me.